So the big news for a lot of music lovers this weekend is the return of Garbage, a band that was the darling of the alt-rock circuit in the mid-90s and the early 2000s. The group has a special place in a lot of Midwestern hearts. It got its start right here in Madison. Founded by legendary music producer Butch Vig, musicians Duke Erickson and Steve Marker, and fronted by the red-haired Scottish rock goddess Shirley Manson. So Garbage recently reunited after a seven-year break. They released a new album on their own independent label, and this weekend they're back on home ground, performing in Milwaukee and Madison. I'm Ann Strangechamps, and you're listening to 45 North here on Wisconsin Public Radio. We're going to have Shirley Manson joining us in just a few minutes, but first let's take a listen to this track. Shirley Manson, welcome back to Wisconsin. What's it like to be back in the Midwest?
It's amazing, of course, as always, but it's cold.
Yeah, you're living in LA these days?
Yeah, for the most part.
Uh-huh. Well, I've seen photos and videos of your recent concerts, and you guys look like you're having the time of your lives. It's hard to believe. It's kind of hard to believe that, you know, you guys, well, you in particular, actually left music altogether for a little while. How did you get back together?
Well, it's true. We did. We took some time off, and that time off turned into 7 years, as it turns out, which was way longer than any of us anticipated. But I guess just enough time had passed, and we all started to feel the itch to make music again, you know. And I bumped into Butch at...
it was a funeral, I read.
It was a funeral for a friend of ours, little boy. Oh. And I sang at the funeral, and afterwards, you know, Butch came up to me and he was like, wow, that was intense, and it was great to hear you sing. And I was like, yeah, I really miss music and I really want to make music again. And he was like, yeah, I feel exactly the same way. And I was like, okay, well, let's call the boys up this week and see if they feel ready. And everybody was on the same page, which was wonderful.
Hmm. Why did you break up in the first place? I mean, were things kind of getting rocky, or were you guys just exhausted?
Well, not to be too pedantic, but we never actually did break up. That was yet another, you know, piece of false information made up by some media source. But we just decided we needed a break. And, you know, I think at first we thought it would be 6 months, and it just turned into 7 years. And it was really more fatigue more than anything. You know, we'd been on the road for sort of 10 years at this point, and we were at loggerheads with our record label, and I think the joy had been sucked out of us, to be honest.
Yeah, reading between the lines of some of the press reports that were written around then, it sounded like, I mean, you guys were indie from the beginning. That was a really big piece of your spirit. And, you know, then you got so successful and you wound up with one of the big labels, and you felt a lot of, I guess, corporate pressure.
Well, we felt first and foremost resentment, because as we became more successful, by total default, as you so rightly said, on an indie label, we became an asset. You know, you become an asset at that point. And we got sold to a major record label, and we never got consulted and in that move. And we felt really powerless and furious, actually.
Yeah, I guess
we find ourselves in this situation.
I guess I'm really ignorant about the music industry. I didn't know that could happen. You can just get sold?
There's a lot of, I mean, that's the problem with the music industry, is there's a lot of that goes on that people don't know about. And in lots of other industries, this kind of practice wouldn't be tolerated. But musicians are pretty unprotected for the most part. And there's... it's everything's under cloak and you know, behind curtains, and a lot goes on that you wouldn't imagine.
So what's the difference between being an indie group and, you know, recording on your own label, and being an asset of a major label?
Well, I mean, I'd have to probably sit here and bark on for about 2 hours, and I'm not going to bore you with that. But suffice to say that, you know, we signed to a very, very small label where we knew everybody by name, and everybody at that label was involved on a daily basis with how we operated as a band. And they knew us and they knew what we loved and what our morals were. And, you know, and so it was a very invested group dynamic, that a team, you know, it was a real team. And then we got sold to a label that, you know, A, didn't really like us as musicians and as a band. They weren't interested in our music. And, you know, as a result of that, you know, if your record company aren't interested in you, why would you ever expect the public to be interested in you? You know, I mean, it just creates a malaise for everybody involved.
So now that you guys decided it's time to come back and make music again, you're back with your own label, right? An indie label. And I read something, what, you recorded in your own home studio?
We did, yeah. We set up our own label, which is called Stun Volume, and there are four amazingly good-looking and talented CEOs. And it's a very well-run record label, and we've had so much fun with it. You know, it's just been really rewarding. And we took a risk. You know, we put our own money into making the record. We recorded it actually at my husband's studio in Atwater in Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. And it was a labour of love. We had no idea if anybody was really interested in us at this point, because we'd been out of the game, so to speak, for 7 years, which is a lifetime in the music industry. And we finished up with this record that we're really proud of. And yeah, we just decided, okay, we're going to release it and we'll see what happens.
Okay, well, let's listen to a bit of the title track. This is Not Your Kind of People from Not Your Kind of People. I guess instead of talking about what you didn't like about the corporate world, we could have just played that song. that seems pretty pointed.
Yeah, I guess so. That's the great thing about being in a band. You know, you can get your revenge so easily by just writing a song about it.
Yeah, just a giant finger. So it does kind of beg the question, what kind of people are you then?
You know, I don't know. I think the one thing we learnt about ourselves is we're not really motivated by money, and we're not motivated by sort of being number one. That just doesn't interest us at all. And I think that came as a shock to the record label that we were involved with at the time. I think they just assumed that everybody who's involved in music just wants to be the most popular girl in class, you know, the most popular boy, the most popular band. And that really isn't how we listen to music. It's not how we value music. It's just not part of our language at all. Mm-hmm. And I think that was one of the things we learned about ourselves. You know, it's a great feeling as a band when you start to really understand what makes you tick as a group. And I think that's one of the reasons why we've had so much fun this time around, because there's just a implicit understanding between us as people about what's important, you know?
Yeah. Well, I think especially for musicians in the alt-rock world and in rock, that sense of being an outsider is a primary identity. And I think, you know, you can listen to the lyrics of that song and apply it to, you know, your situation or your feelings about work. But, I mean, there's also a kind of existential piece to that also, probably the reason so many fans love your music and would identify with that song. We all, to a certain extent, feel like outsiders, like we don't quite fit in with everybody else.
Yeah, I think absolutely it's part of the human condition. I think everybody actually deep down probably feels a bit like a lone wolf. But, you know, right now there's sort of this pressure on everybody to be as one in terms of, you know, how many people like me on Facebook and how many people are following me on Twitter, and we're all part of this big group together, and yet the loneliness in the midst of all that nonsense is just palpable for the most part, I think. You know, we're all behind our computer screens typing away, you know, from the bedroom or from the office, or I don't know, I just think people feel really unconnected the more connected, in inverted commas, we become via the internet, you know.
We're talking with Shirley Manson. She's the lead singer of the alt-rock iconic band Garbage, back together and playing in Wisconsin this weekend. I'm Anne Strangehamps, and you're listening to 45 North on Wisconsin Public Radio. And if you would like to join our conversation, perhaps the band Garbage has been really important to you. Maybe they've provided the soundtrack to a key moment in your life. Call and tell us the story. 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. And you can also email us. It's talk@wpr.org. Cross the deep blue ocean. Rest. So I am cruel. But have the love and sweetness. If I had you. I'm Anne Strangehamps, and this is 45 North. We're talking with Shirley Manson, lead singer for the band Garbage today. Shirley, that's Milk from the album Garbage. You guys released it in 1995, and this was a live version recorded at the Bazaar Festival, I think.
I'm glad you told me that, because I was sitting there and my ear peaked to a note that sounded flat, and I was like, wow, I didn't remember it sounding this bad.
Well, A, I didn't hear anything flat, but... But that makes me think of something one of your bandmates said once. What was it? Something like, our goal is to take pop music and make it sound horrible.
Oh, poor Steve said that. And, you know, it's a quote that has been pulled out and used against us literally for nearly 20 years.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Time, I hate it when
no.
Every time it
gets used, everybody looks at Steve with sort of pinpoint.
Sort of like, thanks a lot, Steve.
Yeah, and Steve looks really embarrassed and goes, oh, God, I really wish I hadn't said that.
Okay, well, we'll forget all about that, because to your fans, your music sounds amazing. But I'm curious, how do you describe your music? If somebody, you know, a Martian beamed down, they'd never heard your music, they said, yeah, well, you know, so what is the Garbage sound? What would you say?
Oh, my God. Well, you know, again, because you get asked these questions, you have to come up with these answers, and you come up with really glib ones usually. I mean, we used to call it sci-fi pop because it was sort of forward thinking at the time in terms of how we used the new technology, you know. But now we're like 17 years on from that, and it's no longer new technology. So we're sort of at a loss as to how to describe it. I mean, generally speaking, I guess you'd call it alternative rock, but... you know, it's just a sound of four weirdos trying to connect with other people.
I kind of like the sci-fi pop, though. Which also, I mean, one of the things you did during those 7 years, you guys took a break. You actually played, you started doing some acting. You played the Terminator in the TV Terminator Sarah Connor Chronicles.
I played the top of the line, the most sophisticated Terminator in Terminator terminology, which is the T-1001, which is way ahead of Arnie, way more sophisticated robot. So yeah, it was amazing. I absolutely loved every minute of it, and I fell in love with the sci-fi genre.
How did that happen? I mean, is that the kind of thing, did you audition to be a Terminator, or did they call you?
I did have to audition. I actually had to go through 3 auditions, as it turns out, but it began, the opportunity arose from, I was at actually Gwen Stefani's baby shower, of all things, and I met a writer there who we were talking about, James Ellroy, the writer, who I'm a huge admirer of, and halfway through the conversation, he said, you know, I think you'd make an amazing robot. And I kind of stopped in my tracks and said, oh,
just what every girl wants to hear.
Yeah. And he said, you know, would you like to be in my TV show? And I was thinking to myself, oh, yeah, here we go. Typical Hollywood kind of crap that gets discussed at parties. And I was like, yeah, sure. I'd love to be in your TV show. Whatever, dude. And then about a year later, he actually called up and asked me if I'd come and audition for the network. So the next thing I knew, I was on set at Warner Brothers, shaking literally in my shoes, and about to step on to film my first episode. Uh-huh. Very odd. Life is crazy.
Does acting feel similar to fronting the band, being on stage? I mean, they're both performing.
You know, I couldn't really begin to equate them because I don't have enough experience in acting to really be able to make comparisons. I mean, music and performing music is like second nature to me now at this point. And I've been doing it since I was 15. So, I mean, we're talking 30 odd years. Whereas acting, I still haven't even begun to crack the surface of it. So all I know is that I was bloody terrified.
Are you going to keep acting? You're going to keep acting though, right?
I would like to if I get the opportunity. But, you know, you just never know. There's so many way more talented people than me out there. If I get another opportunity to do it, though, I would love to. And I have been a lucky girl in my life. So you never know. I might get another chance.
Hmm. Well, we've got some fans who would love to have a word. We've got Josh in Wisconsin Rapids is on the line. Hey, Josh.
Hi, Shirley.
Hi, Josh.
I've been a big fan of Garbage for about half my life now, it seems, and I just think that your band is wonderful. I love hearing you sing, I did have a question for you, though. I've known for a long time that you're a Wisconsin band, and I was just wondering how a Scottish girl like you hooked up with those guys. That's a story I've never seen anywhere. Love the music you make, and thank you for brightening my life with it.
Oh, thank you, first of all, for saying such sweet things. And, you know, we are a Wisconsin band, even though I don't sound like I'm from the Midwest. And your question as to how I ended up there in Madison, Wisconsin, really is a good one because it's very odd. I had a Scottish band called Angel Fish that got played on MTV one night late. On, I think it was 1 o'clock in the morning. It got played once, I think, by Matt Pinfield. And Steve Marker, who lived in Madison, Wisconsin, and was looking for a singer in his band, heard me sing and saw me in this video and thought, let's call her up and see if she'd be interested in coming over and recording with us. And to cut a long story short, that's eventually what happened. And here I am, nearly 20 years later.
So I heard there was... I heard another version of that story, which is you came and you auditioned for them and it didn't seem to work and you went back home.
Mm-hmm. That's correct. It was an absolute fiasco because, again, I was very nervous and I'd never been to America before and I was just overwhelmed, you know, and it was just a disaster. And I went home and their manager called me up and said, so the boys didn't feel it went too well. How did you feel it went? And I said, it was horrific. And she said, well, would you be up for having another crack at it? And I went, okay. And I happened to be in the States with my own band at that time. And so they flew me up again to Madison. And this time we sort of really gelled and we came up with some ideas together. And the rest is history, so to speak.
So let's hear it for Second Chances. I'm going to go next to Beth in Richland Center. Hi, Beth. Thanks for calling.
Hello, and hello, Shirley. I'm wondering now where Garbage has been all my life. I have a question for you, but I want to just briefly say first that all of my life I've been more of a classical vocalist, mm-hmm. Even though I'm a good Scots girl myself from the Midwest, but
Excellent.
Still a Scots. And... I'm listening to the selections that have been played this morning, and I really picked up that beautiful, spooky sci-fi, what is that, liminal, what's right around the corner kind of feeling to the sound. It's wonderful to me, and you make me want to sing again. Thank you.
Oh, well, then you must sing.
Absolutely. I'm following my dreams in other ways that are really wonderful for me, helping other people make their dreams come true. But I need to sing, and I want to ask you something I ask all of my students and clients. If you could really just cut loose and do exactly what you wanted, free from impediment of any sort, with your music, with your band, what would you do?
Oh, my God. I mean, that's
a great question.
I would want to, I mean, at the risk of sounding nauseating, of course I'd want to heal every heart and bring great peace to all men and equality. If I had my druthers.
You completely silenced us. Okay, so let's hear.
I did. I realized I completely, everybody is like frightened of me now.
No, but I want to, so your band has, used to have sort of a bit of a reputation for playing, I don't want to call them downer songs, but, you know, kind of a little on the dark side. But there's a track I wanted to ask you about on the new album. So let's play it first. This is called Big Bright World. Shivers up and down my spine, feet to the teeth, inside this bed. I love that moment when it just kicks in. And also that Rage Against the Dying Light. Isn't that a line from a Dylan Thomas poem?
It absolutely is, Mr. Dylan Thomas, yeah.
Well, what's the poem? I mean, that's the poem about do not go gently.
Yeah, do not go gently into this night. I mean, it's about death.
Yeah, it's about rage against the dying of the light. It's about raging against death, not going gently.
It's about having fun, right? I mean, It's just about living your life and having as much fun as you can, because tomorrow you just don't know what's going to happen. You don't know who's going to come creeping around the corner. So you should live large and live loudly and enjoy yourself, possible.
Do you feel like that that song, Big Bright World, that vision of the world is full of possibility and brightness? Is that a different version of the world than you had maybe earlier on some of your earlier albums?
No, I think it's exactly the same. It's just a sort of mirror image of it in a way.
What do you mean?
Well, you know, that song in particular, you know, sounds very optimistic and bright and happy, which of course, it's actually talking about death. And so one could argue that it's not really a bright and happy song, and vice versa. You know, some of our darkest songs are actually talking about really, really beautiful, amazing things. So I think what we tend to like to do is just try and play with people's perceptions, you know. And if people want to listen on the surface of things, then they can get carried away on the energy of something upbeat and happy sounding. But you're slipping in a sort of darker, sort of deeper sort of meaning to it at the same time, or vice versa, you know. I think it's just more interesting to us than being really obvious. And I don't think anybody in the band really has a desire to write just meaningless, happy, clappy party songs. We just have no interest in it. I think there's plenty of that out in the world as it is. And I think as a band, we are yearning to hear something with substance, I guess, that can sustain you throughout times of difficulty in your life, which, you know, every life is touched with trouble. There's nobody out there living a life that remains untouched by challenge, you know. And I think All I know is that when I'm at my darkest and I hear like a really throwaway, happy, superficial pop song on the radio, it makes me feel incredibly alone and bleak. And yet if I hear a deeper song whilst feeling scared, that helps sustain me. And that's what I'd like to be able to do for other people with our music, I guess.
I think it has to do also with emotional subtlety, don't you think? Because so much of what we hear is, I sort of think of it as emotionally simplistic. You know, it's either, because music is so much a language of emotion, and those happy, happy, upbeat, energized songs, I always think of them as like music for, oh, this is going to sound like such a put-down, music for extroverts, and I don't mean to put down extroverts. But I think so much of what we feel, especially as you age, is, you know, your emotions are all kind of mixed up together. You know, you can have happiness with an edge of nostalgia and grief, or you can have, you know, sadness that also can feel a little satisfying. And
yeah,
I think that's one of the things that your music does, is sort of, you know, you undercut the dominant emotion always in some way or another.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. But again, you know, we are so busy putting people and things into cages. You know, I mean, you talk even of extrovert versus introvert. I don't think an introvert is any deeper or feeling more than an extrovert. You know, it's just, I think we're just all complex and complicated, and we all like different things at different times and need different things at different times. And, you know, that's why art exists, because a lot of the time words and just normal life can't touch those parts that we need solved. I don't know if I'm making any sense. I'm beginning to think I'm actually maybe losing the plot a little bit over here.
No, I think you said something beautiful. Don't back off it. I'm Anne Strangehamps. This is 45 North, and we are talking with Shirley Manson, the lead singer for the alt-rock band Garbage. They're back in Wisconsin performing in Milwaukee, I think. Yes, Milwaukee Saturday night and Madison Sunday night, and I think they're still tickets around if you want to try to hear them. And if you would like to join the conversation, maybe you are a longtime Garbage fan and their music has been that a soundtrack to your life, inspired you in some way, call and let us know. 800-642-1234. And also send us an email if you want. It's talk@wpr.org. And it's 45 North. My smile in the dark. Welcome back to 45 North. I'm Anne Strangehamps, and we're talking with Shirley Manson today, lead singer for the band Garbage. And Shirley, some more folks who are on the line hoping to talk with you. Let's go to Mike in Madison.
Good morning. I just want to tell Shirley and me to refer this to your bandmates that I used to play in bands in Chicago in the 90s, and later on I used to come up to Madison to hang out. It was like, if I didn't have shows in Chicago, I'd come up and hang out in Madison for its awesome local music scene it had once upon a time. And I used to run into you guys at parties all the time and at the bars. And it was really nice because your egos were always in check and you guys were always really nice. And I used to go back to Chicago and hang out with bands that are now very famous, touring acts, and tell them, be like, wow, you know, I got to hang out with Garbage. They're really cool. And they'd be like, oh, really? And I'd be like, yeah, see, this is why you guys got to keep your egos in check, because, you know, you can be famous and still be a nice person and have your egos in check. Just so you know that I used to use you guys as an example for bragging on how to be a rock star and still be cool.
Oh, that's a great story.
You made me feel good about myself this morning.
Thanks. That's great. And I also wanted to check in with Jess in Milwaukee, who I think has something to say about
the music you did for the James Bond movie. Is that right, Jess?
Yes, it is. That was my introduction to Garbage. And I think the first album I bought from the band is Beautiful Garbage.
Yeah.
Was that the album,
yeah,
I think?
Yeah, that is correct.
Pardon?
That is correct.
Oh, okay. Well, I got to tell you, that song for the Bond movie was outstanding. I mean, it's a moving song for the movie. It sets it up nice. And not only that, that's the movie that Llewellyn dies after the production of the movie. So there was a whole tribute to it and so on. So for me, that was a movie that really touched, and the song was just outstanding.
Okay. Thank you so much. I must do public radio way more often. It's making me feel really good about myself.
we're great people, and we're perfect Garbage fans. So actually, we've got that queued up. Let's take a listen. This is The World Is Not Enough. So I assume, as a Scottish girl, you must be a James Bond fan.
Of course. Of course. Who isn't a James Bond fan? I mean, really, there's very few out there.
But who's your favourite Bond?
Oh, Daniel Craig.
Oh, yes!
God.
Yes.
Yeah. I was so gutted when he made his debut, and I was like, oh, I wish we'd sung the theme song for this movie.
Oh, maybe you should volunteer. I wish you had too. But so I want to talk to you some about being a woman in rock music. And actually, that's a singing a Bond song, you know, sort of in the persona of a Bond girl is a great way into that, I think, because I've often thought that, I guess for all performers, you know, when you're performing, not just recording in a studio, but performing, you're channeling some really powerful energy, I think. There's something, I mean, there are various archetypes you can kind of play into. Do you feel that way about performing?
You know, it's changed for me over the my course of my career. I mean, certainly I feel now that it's channeling the most honest, most authentic version of myself when I'm up there now. That's how I feel. It's like being as honest as possible. So you're revealing everything about yourself. And that's when I think you make the most powerful performances that connect with people and on some strange sort of animalistic level that's really powerful. When you can be that sort of vulnerable, I think people really connect to it in a funny way. But that's taken me... Oh my God, I mean, I've been playing since I was 15. So yeah, you know, over 30 years of playing live to actually get to that point. And it's exciting as a performer, you know, to be able to get to that place because I haven't always been there. I think when I first started out as a singer, I felt I had to be something I wasn't. I felt I had to role play in a funny way and I had to protect myself. And actually, it's the complete opposite of that.
But I think that's what growing up does, don't you? I mean, I think we all start out in our 20s or 30s or whatever, sort of desperately trying to look like we belong. We try on different masks. And in some ways, getting older, I mean, for me, the joy of middle age is taking some of those off.
Well, I love hearing an adult woman say something like that because I think this kind of dialogue is so thin on the ground right now. I feel exactly the same way. I feel like getting older has been an absolute joy for me in most cases. The only thing I'm not so keen on is, unfortunately, the physical deterioration that you witness in the bathroom mirror, you know, of a
morning.
Yeah,
that totally sucks.
That's a little tough. I'm not going to lie. But everything
well, it wouldn't
else
be so bad if we. It wouldn't be so bad if we weren't surrounded, you know, frankly, by images in the paper all the time of older women who still look amazing. And I don't know how they do it. I mean, but I think it's a lot of money and a lot of airbrushing.
Well, there's some of that, you know, but some, I mean, let's not lie to ourselves. There are women who look bloody amazing. They just do. And that's just genetic. They're just genetically blessed. And it does exist. They're you know, the thing that bothers me is I feel like there is so little honest discourse, you know, about aging. People just don't want to talk about aging. I mean, even my own girlfriends are saying, you shouldn't talk in the public about your age. People don't know how old you are, so don't talk about it. And I'm like, don't be ridiculous. You know, I feel like I want to help other young women behind me learn how to enjoy getting older, because I've met young women very recently. You know, 23-year-old girl at a birthday party just recently said to me, I don't want to get old. I'm really scared of getting older. And I was thinking, well, it's, what's the alternative? You're going to die, you know, at 23 years old? Don't be ridiculous. You want to get old and crusty and wrinkly.
But more than that,
as much life as you can.
I'm 52 and I feel more powerful and better at what I do than I ever have in my life. I am happier
and
more
centered. That's because you are, you know, but
that's, I mean, this is what 52 looks like.
I think it's, I think culturally there is a subconscious desire to disempower women by making them focus on something they can't control, i.e. their physicality, you know, their external physicality. They can't, you cannot control that, but somehow society has found a way of making us all feel less than we are because we're all aging, and it's ridiculous because I don't see male counterparts having the same issues, and I just, it bothers me.
So it's really interesting hearing you say that, because then as a musician and performer and the lead singer in a band, your job is to stand up there on stage and, you know, rock the look and look stunning.
Well, yeah, there's that pressure, you know, but, you know, there's that pressure. But I think that I have more to say and more things of value to offer other than just looking good in a high pair of heels. And I want to fight against that as much as I can, you know. I mean, just this year we've come up across a lot of, you know, ageism that exists in our culture, you know, such as, you know, where, well, we're not going to play their record because she's too old.
You're kidding.
Meanwhile, they're playing male counterparts who are a lot older than me. I'm not kidding. I mean, this is common practice. Oh, BBC One in Britain, for an example.
They said they're not going to play like a video of yours because you're too old?
We will not play Garbage because they're too old. And I understand that they're trying to attract an audience. I understand that there's certain things at play. But to actually say that, I think, is really shocking.
I'm curious.
You know, I think it's really shocking.
I'm curious. I do too. So I'm curious. You came of age following a generation of really strong women rockers. I'm thinking of musicians like Patti Smith, Debbie Harry, Madonna even. Do you feel part of a kind of post-feminist generation of women musicians?
Well, I've never understood the term post-feminism for a start. I mean, to me, feminism is about believing that women should be treated equally in society. And that to me is what feminism is. And again, I think the word has been sullied deliberately to stop women from aligning themselves with feminism and the desire to all as one be treated equally. So I call myself a feminist. I hope that I can be considered as someone who puts forward a positive spin on being a female in the world. And that's all really I can do. Mm-hmm. And
who are your biggest musical influences, the women?
Well, you mentioned a lot of them, you know. I mean, my to this day, my burning light is Patti Smith. Because she, to me, has had the most beautiful, graceful career and continues to have an amazing career unabated, regardless of her age. And she has never played the pretty girl card. She's never gone on stage looking young and gorgeous, except when she was young and gorgeous, you know. But she makes no apologies for who she is, and she's treated as an artist.
Did you read her recent memoir?
I did. I thought it was absolutely exquisite, you know.
Yeah. Were there any particular moments in that that, I don't know, if you think of that book now, is there a story or a scene that just really stays with you?
Well, the one when she walks into the bar under the Chelsea Hotel, you know, and knocks into Grace Slick and Jimi Hendrix and just that whole world, you know, where rock and roll was really just beginning and that was full of really colourful, crazy characters, you know, all who were living on the edge, really. You know, she was living on the edge. She just uprooted herself and basically was homeless in New York, you know, all for the pursuit of love and art. And I really admire that.
Yeah, they were all holed up there in the Chelsea Hotel, all of them poor and young and making amazing music. Yeah, I asked for emails and I should read them, actually. We got one from Baron who says, "Love the Sarah Connor Chronicles. Didn't realize you were the evil redheaded robot, but I loved that character." Anyway, speaking of female images, you probably never thought you were going to grow up and become an evil redheaded robot.
That morphed out of a male urinal. It was absolutely a piece of genius on the writer's part. It was wonderful.
And then we got an email from Paul who wants to know what you think of the recent Scottish influences in American media. So there's you, and then he says now we have Craig Ferguson, as he once put it, deconstructing the talk show. So some good things coming out of your homeland.
Well, you know, I love Craig Ferguson. I think that's well documented. I admire him. I think he's really talented, and I always relish being on his show. And you know, I always love seeing any Scottish people do well in America because it's tough to do well here. You know, it's a huge country with its own talents, and so for a foreign body to step on the land and do well here is wonderful. It's the classic American dream.
Hmm. Let's hear from Glenn in Stoughton, who I think also has something to say about your appearances on Craig Ferguson. Am I getting that right, Glenn?
Yes. I love it when Shirley is on Craig's show because ordinarily we see her as kind of this sexy rock goddess, and she gets on that show and they have such a goofy time that I love it when she's on there. But I did want to say that, I first heard Garbage on our local community supported station, WORT. And when I heard the first chords of Vow and then heard Shirley start singing, I was like, this is something to remember. And I think she's got one of the most iconic rock voices in a long time. And I really appreciate the chance to tell her.
That's great.
Thank you
Thanks.
So much. appreciate that.
We talked just a little bit about your musical, your rock music influences, but you know, you began singing when you were young. When I listen to you, I kind of hear a little bit of some of the gorgeous jazz singers in your voice. Did you grow up listening to jazz at all?
I did grow up listening to a lot of jazz. I grew up with Billie Holiday and Nina Simone and Sarah Vaughan and Peggy Lee, a whole bunch of different singers, courtesy of my darling mother. And I also sang, you know, in a choir. I had a lot of classical choral work, actually, that I did from quite a young age up until through my teens. So I've had a very wide sort of musical education.
What do you think you got from the choral singing? Or did you grow up singing in church?
I grew up singing in church, yes, but I sang mostly in a choir outside of school and church, which was just a choir that my dad had put me in. And I learned how to confidently read music, which is a great help, really. It taught me a lot of discipline and taught me to listen, which is really important, you know, when you play in a band in particular. And it taught me a lot about harmonizing, and I just think it was invaluable. The more you know about all different types of music, I think it just helps to educate yourself.
Let's go next to Kathy in Lake Geneva. Hey, Kathy.
Hi.
Hi, Kathy.
Hi,
Shirley.
Hi. I just wanted to say thank you for making such honest music. I have loved you guys for so long. I saw you years ago with U2 in Chicago. And you were just totally amazing. And I'm a painter and every time I want to go crazy, I just turn your music on, especially, sorry, I'm getting nervous now.
That's okay.
You actually mean a lot to me, and I listen to your music all the time, and I'm just a little excited to talk to you, but I just think that your music is funny when you're talking about it being a little dark or something like that. I always took it as the complete opposite, almost like just like aggressively triumphant, you know, against any oppression that may come from the dark side. It's
exactly.
Yeah, you're daring it. You're like, bring it on. And it always just empowered me totally. And when you said, when you hear the happy little music, it's like, oh, give me a break, you know. I'm not feeling that at all, you know. So I just wanted
to thank you
so much for that. And I'm actually in Lake Geneva, so hopefully I can catch you on in Madison on Sunday. I didn't even know you were around the area right now. So just thank you so much.
Thank you so much. That's awesome.
Wow. Yeah, that's beautiful. And she caught the thing that I haven't asked you about, which is the standing up to oppression and the political side of what you guys do. I just noticed sort of trending online recently when I was sort of looking what you'd been doing lately. Just recently, there was a performance, I think, in Detroit, and you stopped the show in the middle of it for a gay couple's marriage proposal. So what happened?
Yeah, we did. It was gorgeous. Yeah.
What happened?
Well,
I mean, how did you even know there was a marriage proposal somewhere out there?
I don't know quite how it happened because, you know, we get a lot of messages, a lot of letters, and I just happened to see this man's letter in the midst of all our billion other messages that we get on Facebook, and I clicked on it, and there was just something about the way he wrote about his partner and that he was coming to the show and how much they loved our music together and how it, you know, he was going to ask him to marry him. And I was like, well, do you want to ask him to marry him on stage? And he was like, hell yeah. And they came up on stage and we were all crying and it was really amazing and really sweet. And I don't know, it was wonderful. And also just great to be able to show our solidarity with gay men and women as they're in the fight for their rights right now, you know, their lives. And I feel very strongly, as does the rest of the band, that this is a civil rights issue and we want to put our weight behind it.
Yeah. And there's another thing you did recently I wanted to make sure I had time to ask you about. You know, speaking of independent, you wrote this gorgeous love letter to independent record stores recently. And I know you're releasing something new for World Record Day. I didn't even know there was a World Record Day, but it's coming up soon, like April 20th. So what is it you're doing?
Well, there's a day, as you so rightly said, called Record Store Day in the world at this point. And it celebrates the independent record stores around America and the rest of the world who sell vinyl. And I guess you could say we are nostalgic sometimes and we still love the practice of putting vinyl on a turntable and listening to music that way. And it's something that we think is very precious and very special. And we made a recording, a duet, actually, a cover version of a Patti Smith song, funnily enough, called Because the Night, with another band called The Screaming Females, who have this incredible lead singer called Marissa Paternoster, who's a great singer and a crazy, like, Eddie Van Halen shredder on the guitar. And we recorded this duet together for Record Store Day. And yeah, I wrote this letter, a sort of love letter to just the notion of independence and independent spirit, which I think is what independent record stores stand for, really, in a world that's becoming increasingly generic and homogenized.
Shirley, thank you so much for all you guys stand for, and thanks for joining us today.
Well, I would say the same to public radio, so back at you.
Okay. Shirley Manson is the lead singer for Garbage, and iconic alt-rock band that got its start in Madison, Wisconsin. They're performing in Wisconsin this weekend in Milwaukee Saturday night and Madison Sunday night. It has been great spending time with you today. So let's meet again, same time, yes, same place, next Friday. And in the meantime, stay in touch on Facebook. 45 North is produced by a bunch of strong-minded women, Marika Suval, Rhonda Fanning, and Jennifer Dargan. Dave Potraz makes sure all that estrogen doesn't short out the board, and he keeps us sounding good. I'm Ann Strangechamps. I'll see you again next week on 45 North from Wisconsin Public Radio.